We go.
Okay, so my name's Juan, and can you introduce yourself?
My name's Aaron. I'm the singer of My Dying Bride.
Okay, thank you. So let's just get started with the questions.
Okay, let's roll
with that. Okay. The new album came out with, like, going to, like, some elements of the older albums.
Mm-hmm.
Why did the band went back to, like, the violin? And
well, we didn't purposely do it. We never plan an album before we start writing it. So we never really know how it's going to sound when we finish it. But Sarah, the old keyboard player, left to have a baby. So obviously we needed a replacement. And Katie came along to do the keyboards, but also revealed she could play the violin as well. So that was just a great bonus for us. We didn't go out and look for a violin. She just happened to have one with her. So it was really good. So suddenly we thought, well, this is going to open a new avenue for us, or even touch bases with our early material by having this classic old instrument back with us. And so we thought, yeah, let's use it, but not too much. We didn't want to put violin on every song, loads and loads of it, because that would sound ridiculous. It would just become a terrible, cheesy, cliche thing, and everybody would only talk about the violin, and it's not about that. Violin is there to enhance what's already there. There was never any music written specifically for the violin. Everything was written for guitars and vocals, and then the violin was added after. So it's not a violin heavy album. But that's a good link to our past. And also with the lyrics as well, I tried to recreate some of the early feeling that I got on some of the first and second album. And again, that's a big strong link to our past as well. So with the violin and the lyrics, and also a certain degree of underproduction. We didn't try and overproduce the album so it sounded like the most fantastically expensive, rich thing ever. We wanted the music to stand up for itself and not put too many special effects on and just fill everything out with crap. So, and again, keeping it quite raw like that lends itself to the early material when we had no money and we couldn't do anything like that anyway. So there are three elements there which make this new album sort of almost faithfully recreate the ambience of the early My Dying Bride material.
Oh. Yeah, that pretty much sums it up. So what do you think about how the people have reacted to the album so far? Because I've read amazing reviews. We wrote amazing reviews about your album, so
it's been really good. It's great. It's always good when you get a good review, obviously, because you've worked hard on the music and you want other people to like it.
Mm-hmm.
But the journalists have been so good to My Dying Bride over the last sort of 6 months. It's almost like we're a new band again. There's a freshness about it, and now we do interviews enthusiastically now, because there becomes a period when a band has been going for 19 years. When you have interviews to do, sometimes you think, not another one. But that hasn't happened for this album. We enthusiastically attack interviews now because there's a new, somehow renewed freshness about the whole thing. It's like we're starting out again. Maybe that's got something to do with having younger people in the band again.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of that injection of youth has given us a new vitality. And so we're kind of buzzing again now. And with the good reviews, it's just, I know, it's all fresh and new again. And I feel like I'm 20 years younger, which is probably a good thing.
Well, what do you think about some people, I mean, because I read some reviews that you put the two girls in the band just to get to the younger audience or newer listeners. What do you think about that?
Well, neither of them were all that young, to be honest. I don't mean to be rude to the girls, but they weren't exactly teenagers. When Adrian left, the old bass player,
mm-hmm.
We auditioned about five different bass players. Lena was the only female. However, she easily played better than the other people there. They were all good, but she was brilliant. So we just thought, well, she's got the job. Simple as that. And then, obviously, when Sarah left, who, you know, was a girl anyway, so it's not like that's a fair swap. You can't compromise your music integrity with tits. Some bands can, and they will.
Yeah.
We're not about to do that. It's just, we're too long in the tooth for that. Everybody would see it as a gimmick, and it simply wouldn't work. So you've got to make sure that the people joining the band have the music ability first. And if they've got boobs afterwards, that's fine. You know, it's just a bonus, but you can't do that. If you've got an average bass player, people would spot it and say, bass player's not very good, but yeah. She looks nice, so. She looks nice, and she's great at bass playing, so. But nothing to do with appealing to. I never imagined how we could appeal to a younger audience.
How about, what do you have to say about that your music hasn't changed as much as the bands that you started playing with around the same genre? Yeah. Like Anathema and Paradise Lost. Yeah. Now they just play completely different stuff and you guys have stick to your own sound.
Well, I mean, it is brave to move away from your roots and try something new and interesting. It takes a lot of courage to do that because there is a big risk of losing your core fan base. Mm-hmm. But there is, of course, the possibility of gaining a new fan base. And if you move towards a more popular culture, then the sheer nature of that popularity will generate more money for the band. So critics might argue that you try something like that really for the money rather than your music integrity. I don't know whether those bands tried that or not for the music, for the money, but I still think it's a brave thing to do. We like doing what we do. When we did the 34.788% album, we did touch on a few more interesting aspects of the music genre, really pushing the boundaries of what is classed as acceptable rock music. And we enjoyed it. It was a good experimental thing to do, and we felt good doing it. But we've no intention to go down that route, because this is what we've created on the new album is what we like to listen to. And we feel good doing it. You know, obviously we've been doing it long enough, but that's how. When I write music, this is how I want it to sound like, and this is how I want to present myself to other people. And I'm not tempted to go down a more commercial route just for the money, because I then think, you know, okay, I'm going to have to start, you know, wearing tight jeans and stuff and try and appeal to young girls and shit, and that's just not my scene. I'm not going to do that, and I'm not going to write a 3-minute song for the radio. It's not in me. I like telling stories, and when I tell stories, I don't want to make them short and sweet. I'd like to get involved with the characters in those stories. And that inevitably means some of the songs are pretty long. And that means they're not very radio friendly. I don't give a toss about that. I'm not in it for the money. I'm in it for the integrity, for the artistic ability to be able to create music that has depth and atmosphere and emotion and passion. And the commercial side of things, well,
just
I mean,
bonus.
We've never been in the hot spot, you know. We've never had a spotlight on us. We've always hung around the shadows, and we're quite happy for that. You know, we don't appear on many front covers of magazines. We're perfectly happy with that. We're not, My Dime Ride are not here to scream and shout, look at us, look how good we are. We just write music that we enjoy, and thankfully a lot of people enjoy it with us. So the shadows is where we'll stay.
So, that being said, do you now live from the music, or you still have...
No, we've never lived from music. Never, because it's still cult music. I mean, we're headlining this festival, but it is a cult festival still. And it's just, it's hard. Even some of the bigger bands will struggle to make money from the music, which is why they tour all the time. And the problem with touring all the time, when you see a band turn up for their 75th show in a row, they look drawn and tired and they look a bit bored, you know. And when you go and see a band and you pay your good money to go and see that band, you want them to give everything to you. When they've been touring for months, they walk on stage and it's just another day at the office for them. But they have to do it because they're trying to earn money from it. We earn money elsewhere, which means when we do shows, and we don't do many, we probably do 15, maybe 20 shows a year, which is nothing. But that means we can dedicate our energy and our performance 100% to that show, because we're not doing 50 shows in a row. I mean, we've come out here today to do this show, then we're going to go home again. The next show isn't for 3 weeks. So tonight's show will be really special, because we're not tired, we're enthusiastic, and we'll give it everything we've got. And so there is something to be said for keeping your day job and still being in a band, because although it's hard work, obviously, for us it just means the shows are very, very special, and we're not just doing a regular show where we look bored and tired. It's far from it.
And how about, do you guys, when you record, I interview so many bands and they always say that they record like long distance and over the internet, they just send stuff, they just show up to the studio to record. Do you guys still rehearse and the songs before?
Yeah, definitely. I turned up late in the writing process of this album, because I like to allow the guitar players to do their thing, because that's what they like doing. And because I can't play an instrument, I don't want to turn up at rehearsal and say, okay guys, you know, you should play this because it sounds cool. I let them do most of it, and then they will give me a CD with what they've composed on it, and I will then perhaps restructure some of it, add some vocals, and then I'll come to rehearsal and we'll try out the ideas. But I think for this album, I think they had already written probably 80% of the music, and I hadn't written anything. And they went into the studio in Manchester to record it, and when they finished a song, they would send me a CD. I mean, I went across the studio for a few days, normally just to get drunk, and I would take a CD with me home, and I would listen to it and analyse it, and then I put the vocals to it and the lyrics, and it worked out great. You know, I turned up at the end of recording. And I did all the vocals in 2 weeks, and the rest of the guys hadn't heard anything from the vocal point of view. So that's a gamble, because I did 2 weeks of vocals. If they hated it, I would have to start again.
Yeah.
Fortunately, they loved it, so it worked out well. But yeah, I think it's important to get together and see people's faces and see the reaction to them. I mean, it's easier with the digital age to record stuff at home, and yeah, you could almost not meet each other even at all. You don't even have to be in the studio at the same time. You don't even have to be a band, I suppose. It's only when you play live you need to get together. But that doesn't work for us. We formed the band because we like playing music and in a group. And if you're not doing that, then I think it ceases to become a band. It becomes more like a project.
Mm-hmm.
But we're a band through and through. Although we can't always get together, we don't live that far from each other, so there's no excuse for not getting together and listening to other people's ideas. So we do a bit of both, but I think mostly we do get together. It's important to be face to face with your other band members.
So why haven't you joined any other projects or started any other projects? Have you been offered that, or why is the reason you're...
I would quite like to do a project. I mean, my dying bride takes up a lot of my spare time. It's hard to do other things other than that. I don't know, maybe one day, if I can find some breathing space, I would like to do something that's not quite my dying bride orientated. Problem is, because I don't have much time, I haven't quite figured out exactly what that would be yet. I just know that if I were given a few months of absolute freedom to come up with some kind of music project, I would love to be able to do it, and it would probably be more like a soundtrack, because I'm a big soundtrack fan, and I like the way music can move people. I like the ambience. I don't necessarily, you know, I don't think songs need to have great chugging riffs in them, or guitar solos, or, you know, typical rock ideas. So I think I would like to do a sort of project which would be a bit more ambient. But again, that's just a sort of wish for the future, if I can find time to do it. But obviously the promotional stuff for My Dying Bride takes a lot of our time up.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're always a bit busy. But I'm sure one day we'll all, because I'm speaking to Hamish as well, the guitar player, he would like to do another side project. Definitely more guitar oriented, because he loves playing the guitar all the time, and he wants something with solos on and all that sort of shit. And so I think at some point we might get a break and we can do our own thing, but it's not in the foreseeable future, maybe the long distant future, but it would be cool.
So you said that you don't play an instrument. Did you ever attempt it, or you just fell?
I did, yeah. I thought, well, there's a lot of guitar players out there, playing guitar must be easy. And I really struggled. I admire guitar players, even ones who aren't particularly technically brilliant, because although some people find it very easy, I found it really difficult. And so I tried keyboards, and I couldn't do that either. I need a band. And if I do start my own project at some point, I'm going to have musicians to do it. Because I don't have much time, I don't do much, I don't know, any music composition using a computer either. You know, it's easy to do it in your bedroom now, just drum machines and all that stuff, but I don't even have time to do that. So you don't have to play an instrument to create music these days, but it's obviously helpful. And if the project you're working on happens to be quite popular, naturally people want to see you live. And if you've done it all in your bedroom on an Apple Mac, you're going to look shit on stage. So So it's important to have musicians with you. But I would love to be able to play an instrument, and I just can't. I simply don't appear to have the ability to play an instrument, which probably sounds weird to a lot of people, but maybe I just don't have the patience. But I can't do it.
That's going to be an interesting part of the interview.
Well, yeah. I'm sure, you know, most people, if they really try hard and concentrate, they can play something. But I just struggle with everything and anything. Maybe I simply don't have the correct attitude to be able to want to play. Maybe it's just not in my heart. So, vocals it is.
So, what about when you toured recently, like a few shows with Anathema and Paradise Lost? How was that, the reunion?
That was really cool because I hadn't seen some of these guys for 15 years. And for us all to be in the same place at the same time in Paris was just wonderful. Because in the past, when we never exactly saw eye to eye, because we were all younger, we were always drunk, and there's always that sort of competition value, you know, we want to be better than them, they want to be better than us, and so there was always a bit of attitude when we were younger, but and that was a long time ago. When I saw the guys recently, you know, everyone's a bit older, and some of them are married with children, and they're not kids anymore, these are grown adults, and they're so much more mature, and you can have proper conversations with them now about life and the things we've experienced, and it was just so enriching to be with them. So much different from when we were all kids and drunk and arguing and stuff, and it was just, I thought, this is, you know, I could do more of these shows, and we were thinking about trying to get more of these Trinity shows, Unholy Trinity shows together, but with all three bands doing different things, it's really difficult. But yeah, we did Paris and then London, and everyone had a blast. There wasn't a thing, even the crew, all the crews got together, and it was really good, and at the end we had a massive party, and everyone turned up to the party as well, you know, because sometimes when you have after-show parties, there's always someone who's, oh no, I'd rather not. But everyone turned up and everyone was really drunk, and it was so funny. And it was just a really nice experience, really pleasurable, and nice to be with those guys again.
Oh. So from what it sounds, you guys still like to party then, unlike other bands that have been after a while, they just get tired of it.
Well, it varies again. It depends how much you've travelled, I think. And it's all down to sleep and how good the shows have gone. If you've had a great show and, you know, plenty of sleep and good food, you feel refreshed, you feel good. If you've travelled a long way, or the show hasn't been so good, or you've been sat on the toilet all day, after the show, you just want to go to bed. It's as simple as that. You can't predict if you're going to be in a party mood at the end of a show or not. It's just, there's so many different things to sort of add up to make it a good party. So sometimes you just think, I'm going to have a cup of tea, sit on the bus, maybe have something small to eat and go to bed. And sometimes you just, you know, at the end of the show and everybody's leaving, you're like, no, don't go yet. Where are you going? I'll come with you. And you just want to have a drink with these people because they paid money to see you. Because for us, having a drink with people after a show doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, backstage. We always try and get out into the crowd because it's important. These people have paid money for your CDs and for the ticket. And it's important to go out and say thanks and hello and sign anything they want. And we've never been the sort of band who sticks to the tour bus. Dressing room. We've always been out and around. We've already been out there two or three times today. And I think that's important, to not think you're untouchable, to go out and meet people who have spent money on you. I think that's really important to do. And when it comes to having a few drinks after the show, that doesn't necessarily mean back here. It means out there as well.
Oh, that sounds pretty cool. So how about touring in the US and Latin America? You've done a few shows in Mexico, some shows in like New York like years ago. Is there anything on the works?
No, unfortunately, we're going to do South America this year, 3 weeks. But lots of different things have basically killed it, unfortunately. Money for one.
Swine flu.
Swine flu didn't help, because there's a prediction, of course, it will come back with vengeance towards the end of the year, which is exactly when we were going to go. And it's still hard to get guarantees from promoters down there that you're going to get paid.
Oh, yeah.
It's a long way to go to do a show and then for someone to say, there's no money in this. And it's just, it's tricky. But I would love to go because I think it's important to play, well, all over the world, for people who have bought your music and supported you. It's just impractical sometimes, because although we're not that interested in making a big profit at shows, obviously we need to be able to get there and back.
Yeah.
You know, we don't need 5-star hotels or any of that shit. But if some of the people can't even guarantee you, you know, that you're going to get paid after the show. You know, there's 12 of us, you know, 6 band members, 6 crew. Someone has to feed these people. And if they're not going to guarantee you the money, we can't go. We can't starve. And we're not, you know, I've been doing this nearly 20 years. I'm not about to start travelling around some country in a small fucking minibus eating dry bread and that. I'm too old to do that shit now. If they're not going to give us the means to eat and sleep properly, then we're simply not going.
Oh. So how about in the US, you label... Does it have distribution at all? Because it's rare to find your releases in the US except in like specialty stores.
Yeah, it kind of comes and goes really. I don't really understand the business thing, but we were going to do South America and then head up to North. But again, with South America being cancelled, North America's not going to happen either, which is a shame. What we need to do, we need to get over there. And there was talk, in fact, we're going to Chicago next year. Which, you know, for us it's like a big deal. One show in America, other bands are like, one show. We need to play 50 shows in the US. But again, this is the thing about Madame. We don't need to play millions of shows to survive. But we are on the point of signing an exclusive US show for a Chicago venue. I don't know what the festival's called. And I can't remember when it is. I'm high with information. But next year we're playing in America and it's a one-off show in Chicago, but I don't know any more than that. I would like to do more, but the deal was they want us exclusively.
Oh, okay.
For us, you know, you can't come 6 months before and you can't come 6 months after.
Oh, really?
There's something like that. And normally we would just say, fuck off. We're not, why would we do that? Look, stupid. If you're flying there, why not do more than one show? Because our profile is not that good there. We're not a big band there. And we would need to go with a package, you know, like Cradle of Filth or something like that. Yeah. There needs to be a package. And we've spoken with the Cradle guys and they're up for it. But it's getting both bands together at the same time to do that sort of thing. And we're working on it. We're always working on it because when we played there with Dio a few years ago, it was fucking great. We loved it, absolutely loved it. We were there for 4 weeks, I think, travelling around everywhere. And we absolutely loved it, and we thought we must come back here, because even though we were their support band, on the days off that Dio had, we would do our own show.
Oh, okay.
And although there were small crowds, they were so enthusiastic, and we thought, this is fantastic, we must come back. But that was 10, 11, 12 years ago. We haven't been back, and we keep going on at our promoter. You know, we'd love to do America, and he said, I know, it would be great for everyone, but there has to be a package, and the timing has always been, you know, we wanted to go with Paradise Lost, they said, yeah, and then we did this, and they did that, and it just, trying to get together is just always difficult. We'll make it one day, but I just don't know when.
Yeah, because also in America, the tickets for the shows are like, I have to be really cheap or people don't go, and that's why the packages are.
But it's good to go with a package as well, because, especially with another British band, because it's just that wholesome, you know, it's just nice to travel around in a sort of group thing, and if it's not a very good gig, you can blame the other band, and they can blame you. We'd love to do it, it's just sometimes these things are out of our hand. We've done Western Europe many minutes every year, and so I always tell the promoter, you know, I'd like to expand, you know, Japan, Australia, and he's like, yeah, well, that's very well, but you know, it costs us to get 12 of you to Australia. It's fucking expensive.
Yeah,
I know other bands have already done it, but we've heard the stories from these other bands. They've done it, but it's cost them a fortune, and it's all right saying, yeah, we played Sydney and Melbourne, yeah, it was cool. And now they owe the record label €20,000 or more, and you think, was it cool? So I don't know. We'll do it eventually, but I just don't know when. But I need to get outside of Western Europe. I'm not bored of it, but we've done it so many times. It's still good to do. Obviously, I still get nervous, and I'm, you know, but it's to see new territories, new cultures, and visit, see new people from new societies. I think that's really important to do. And I would hate it if we split up in 10 years' time and thought, well, we never played Australia, we never did Japan. That would be terrible.
Yeah, when other smaller bands did.
Of course, yep.
So how about when you write lyrics and when you sing on stage? The stage performances that I've seen in videos, because I never seen you, and I've been a fan for 14 years. And they seem pretty like dramatic and like highly emotional. How do you get in the mindset before doing that?
It turns up with ease, and I sometimes wish it wouldn't, because I get so fucking nervous before a show and anxious, and I don't even talk for these lot. I just can't. It's more than nerves. I don't know what it is. It's there's something else there, and it makes me a real wreck before I go on stage. And when the intro tape goes on and the lights go down, I'm looking for my passport, like, shit, I need to get out of here. Eject! And it's just, it's really hard work, because a lot of my own personal emotion goes into the lyrics. So when I walk out on stage, I'm not just singing rock songs to a load of fans. It's just not like that. I'm going out, and from the minute I open my mouth, I'm pouring out my heart to these people, and I don't even know who they are. And that's how it's hard to stand up and tell people some of your most intimate thoughts. It's not an easy thing to do. And even over these years, it hasn't got any easier. You're standing out there, you might as well be naked. All eyes are on you, and it's just, it's really, really difficult. And so, you know, I'm always, I am in pain, and I don't like it. It's emotionally painful, and that's why I've got my eyes closed half the time as well. Like, I know, it's just, I think sometimes if I look at someone into someone else's eyes, I'll just burst out crying, because I'm just, you know, I'm right on edge when I go on stage. I don't just waltz on, you know, with a whiskey and, yeah, come on, let's rock. It's nothing like that. I can't do that. And I live like the characters in the songs, and most of the characters in my songs are not having a good time. Mm-hmm. And I have to become part of them in order to deliver the song properly. If somebody is having an emotional negative moment in the song, I have to try and somehow match that feeling, otherwise it looks false.
Yeah.
If you're singing a really melodic but melancholy lyric, you can't stand there with your hand on your hip just wailing out. You've got to pour the words out, and they've got to have that feeling of passion. That's why, this is not an excuse, but this is my thing. Sometimes I can't sing in tune because my bottom jaw's going, and because I feel like I'm going to start crying. And so when I'm trying to sing, and my jaw's going, and it's not quite in tune, and some people at the back who probably don't know my dime bag very well are probably thinking, yeah, that's a great singer. But those who know us, they just understand that there's a reason for that, and it's because I have to put everything into it. If I don't, well, I'm not necessarily fooling myself, but I just can't help it. I have to get involved, because I created all the characters, and I spent time with the characters, and I become them on stage, and it's hard work, and after it I am fucked. Even after a short show, I'm mentally exhausted. It doesn't matter about the hot lights and, you know, the temperature and everything like that. That's physically tiring. But it's the mental thing. When I come off stage, I am just exhausted. And the rest of the band, you know, they're all, yeah, come on, have a drink, and I'm just, I need half an hour, 40 minutes just to get my mind back on level again, because it's been up on a spike for an hour and a half, and it's hard and it's uncomfortable, and I really don't like playing live, but obviously the rest of the guys do, and so this is why I'm here, for them and for the fans, obviously. But if I got away with it, we wouldn't play live ever again. It's fucking hard work.
So what do you think, how people reacted when you changed from deep growls to like the clean vocals? So I know a lot of people, it took a while to adapt to that, and personally I was one of them. How do you?
It doesn't bother me, to be honest, because I sometimes think, without being rude, that these people are sometimes blinkered, because when you even look back on our first album, it wasn't all death metal vocals. We always touched on certain areas, and as a vocalist, again, this is probably something to do with the fact that I can't play an instrument. I need to do more with my vocals. They have to be more challenging for me. I can't do the same thing over and over again, although I'm sure some people will say, well, you are doing it. But, you know, when you look at the vocal range on the new album, there's whispers, there's mid-tempo stuff, some of it's quite loud, then there's the whole, you know, just higher pitched stuff, there's black metal, death metal, there's all kinds of stuff on this new album. And I like to be able to test my range ability. I'll never be a great singer, but I like to think that people would see me as a compassionate vocalist, someone who gives everything. If it's not in tune, it doesn't matter, because it's what you're doing with it. It's like Bob Dylan, Mick Jagger, they're not great singers, but they are fantastic performers and vocalists. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily the notes, it's the delivery and the performance behind it. I think that counts. And if I make a few bum notes, well, people who are into the music shouldn't really give a shit, because you're there doing what you do because you're passionate about it. And when we did Like Gods of the Sun, there was no death metal vocals on that at all, and everybody thought that was it now. You know, certain bands, as you mature, they give up that death metal thing.
Yeah.
It's great when you're young, but even when I did interviews for that album, I did say the death metal vocals will return, but I didn't feel it necessary to do it on this album. And you kind of thought the journalists were thinking, yeah, right, as if, of course you're going to say that. And then, of course, the death metal vocals returned, and there are death metal vocals on this album. But I like doing it. When there's aggressive music there, it requires an aggressive vocal, and I'm going to deliver it. And even, I'm 40 years old now, but I can summon that energy to really growl and stuff, because it's good for everybody. Needs to shout sometimes. We've all got a bit of anger there, and to just scream and let off that steam, you feel great after you've done it. And so, vocals now must fit much, much better with the music. And so if the music is slow and melancholic, then the vocals will match that. I'm not going to do death metal vocals anymore over a particularly slow, beautiful piece of music.
Yeah.
I did in the past because, I don't know why, but maybe I didn't have the balls to try cleaner vocals. Now, as I'm older, I want to challenge myself to do clean vocals that match what the guitar players are doing. So if it means, again, maybe an album might not have hardly any death metal vocals, well, that's because it would sound out of place.
It wouldn't fit.
And so I'm not going to do it. And if the fans say, we want more death metal vocals, they'll have to wait until the guitar players come up with a more brutal kind of music. We like death metal, we like black metal, we like gothic metal, we like all kinds of stuff. So we incorporate these things in our music. If the album's more heavy towards one genre than the other, that's just pure accidental, We just write the songs, we record them, and there's the finished product. And we never know if we're doing something perhaps a bit more death metal, or not enough death metal, or just too much violence. We don't know till it's finished. And it's only then you have the full package and you understand where it's going. But I don't mean this to be rude, I'm not going to listen to the fans if they want more death metal vocals.
Mm-hmm.
It will come if it's required. If it's not, it won't.
So have you taken singing lessons or something?
Yeah. No, I often thought it might be interesting to do that. But then, again, I might also think I may never do the death metal vocal again. Because, again, if a teacher will teach you to breathe properly, to get the notes, and I might suddenly find talent I didn't know existed and think, I'm going to pursue this and leave all that old shit behind. And then I think I may be in danger of losing that whole aggressive side, which I like as a rawness to it, which I think is important. But I don't know, I think to try and discover your own ability is a good thing without being taught. So I'm not going to have singing lessons. I may regret it in the future, but I'd like to see what I can do for myself.
Yeah, plus your vocals are original enough, so...
Yeah, I mean, it's not everybody's cup of tea, I understand that. I've never called myself a singer. Well, I might have done sometimes when I'm drunk. I always call myself a vocalist, because, again, it's that whole Bob Dylan, Mick Jagger thing. It's your delivery. You don't have to be Mariah Carey. You don't have to hit every note and have a vast range and be able to do an E or a C or whatever, an E sharp. That, to me, means you actually have no passion at all. You're just doing it because it's expected of you, whereas I would much more give a heartfelt performance that may not quite be in tune, but the tears and the guts there.
So what about the lyrics? Did you study poetry or something?
No, but I like it a lot. I mean, I did at school. I did a bit. On my last year of school, I did English literature. Because I just enjoy it. Because most poetry, when you think about it, harks back to a day gone by. It's that sort of Lord Byron thing. And a language people don't use anymore, although it's still English.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody speaks like that anymore. But it's quite... It's quite romantic and ageless, I think, and classic. And it's nice to hark back to that time when I'm writing the lyrics. And because My Dying Bride conjures up images of... We're a passionate band, we like to have a sort of timeless feel. That's why there's hardly any references to modern, contemporary structures, infrastructures, or political beliefs in our music. Because I think... that will dispel the myth that you're trying to create. People want an image in their mind. Well, for me, when I listen to music, I like to close my eyes and an image appears, and I like to be taken away from this world and just drift off and do something else. I'm not into political bands who simply repeat what's just been on the news. I don't mm-hmm. see the point of that. So for me, the lyrics have to conjure up that sort of imagery of days gone by, because it was a classical era, not of innocence, but of passion, and when poetry was read by loads of people, not because it was all highbrow, because that was almost like the entertainment of the time. You know, reading poetry was like watching a movie today. A lot of people did it. And when poets brought out a new book, people flocked to buy it. No one does that now. I mean, Jesus. But again, when it comes to poetry, I am a big fan of the more classic stuff. Again, contemporary poetry is a bit more in your face. It's a bit more about the war and all that stuff, and I'm not that keen. I prefer the older "Thou art my love" and all this sort of stuff. It's just a silly old romantic thing, really, but I like it. And I've read a lot of poetry, and I still do. I read a lot of books. I must read 20 books a year, but not necessarily all poetry. Just I've got a wide range. I'm always open to people saying, "Oh, have you read blah 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 by whoever?" And I'll say, "No, I've never even heard of it. But let's have a look if you recommend it." And I'll read anything from comedy to great drama. Anything that people recommend that's, you know, quite well written. And I don't really have any great favourites. But yeah, I like words, and I like the manipulation of words. And I quite like the idea of inventing words as well. And Shakespeare invented loads of words. But it's harder to get away with now. He could invent them back then, when the world wasn't so wise, and you could invent a word and people, they wouldn't even question it. They'd never heard it before, but written by Shakespeare, so it must be a word. But I'm going to have to sneak a word into my lyrics at some point that no one's ever heard of before, but it sounds like you might have heard of it. But I've yet to do that. But yeah, I'm a big word fan. I do, you know, I like the delivery of words, and I like to listen to people speak, you know. I'm a wordy man, what can I say?
So what's in the horizon in future years for you and the band that you can envision?
That's a good question, because with this sort of renewed freshness we have with the new album, it almost feels like we're going to start out again, you know. And we've got, we haven't actually toured for a long, long time, but we are doing a 3-week tour of Europe. Is it 3 weeks or 2 weeks, whatever? On the tour bus. I'm quite looking forward to that again, because we did it when we were younger, and it's quite an exciting thing to do. But I really don't know. I'd hate to say more of the same, you know, but it would appear to be that way. We need to get to more territory, so that's the important thing. I'd like to see more of the world. You know, we're a European act. We've been in Europe 19 years. I'd just like to expand a little bit more if that's possible. I like to see new cultures and new societies, and I want to do more of that.
So is there anything else you want to close up the interview with, and you want to say to the US fans that have been waiting?
I have to apologize for not coming over for a long time, but our promoter is always on it. He knows we're keen to get back. There must be obstacles there that are tripping us up. I mean, again, it's easy to say there's 12 of us in a band, six crew, and we've also, I don't know if this is true or not, it probably is, that you're not allowed to bring your own crew to America. The Americans feel that, well, we've got people who can set up guitars and drums, why do you need to bring someone in? And although that's not a huge obstacle, you kind of think, we've been working with our crew for 10 years, it would be almost, you know, almost, I don't know, going behind their back to go with them. But that's not the only reason. Again, our profile over there isn't huge, and so I'm sure when our promoter speaks to other promoters in the States, and they'll say, "My dying who?" And they'll say, "Oh, come on, we can do this." And it's like, you need another band to come along. We need a
more commercial band.
Yeah, or just someone who's already sort of paved the way a bit, you know. Just, yeah, we need to go with someone else, and I'm sure we'll do it one day. I mean, we're good friends with Paradise Lost and Anathema and Cradle of Filth. If we can't sort something out in the next year or two, then something's gone wrong. It would be cool to do it. We had a great time, as I say, when we came over there with Ronnie many, many years ago, and I'm keen to get back, I really am.
Cool. That's pretty much it.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. It was real. Oh.